Music, it's not just part of our daily lives, it's part of our wrestling fandom as well, and it has been for decades. That's where this show comes in. Music of the Mat, the podcast devoted exclusively to the music of pro wrestling, hosted by Andrew Rich. Hey, that's me. Each episode delivers a different topic with a variety of great guests, fun conversations, musical analysis, and of course, a heartfelt pun or two. New episodes drop every other Tuesday on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast app of choice. Check out Music of the Mat only on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey, kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling, too. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. I used to have a joke in my stand-up that went something like this. I was never cool enough to be offered drugs so I could say no. And our entire pre-show conversation was about stuff I had absolutely no clue about, Chris.
Yeah, right. And I'm apparently so knowledgeable about the subject that I'm now branching into it in my career.
Yes. You're in sales and it's legal.
Illegal sales, baby. Legal sales. Cannot wait.
Music geekery out there. RIP to both the great Wayne Shorter and the last surviving member of the original Lynyrd Skynyrd, Gary Rossington, passing away this week at the age of 71. Perhaps the most misunderstood rock and roll band of all time, Lynyrd Skynyrd, in my opinion. Everybody ascribes them to the audience that listens to them rather than what they stood for and everything like that.
It's real interesting, right? Like, it's like their catalog has also been sort of like reappropriated by the fan base to mean things in some cases that they didn't necessarily intend for the songs to mean.
You mean like Give Me Back My Bullets isn't about actual bullets, but it's about records? Yes. And song rights?
Yep. Like, or even Sweet Home Alabama is not exactly. Oh, yeah. Like, it's
the most misunderstood song of all time, I think.
That and Every Breath You Take would be right up there.
Well, one's a positive and one's a negative.
Yeah, right.
Every breath you take is about a creep.
Yeah, no, it's about stalking. Right. Yes. Right.
Yeah. Sweet Home Alabama is about, hey, we're fed up with this guy also.
Yeah, it's like we didn't like Nixon. And also this sort of like sense of like, it's how does one go about affecting change? It's like this interesting discussion in the second verse about like, well, what are we supposed to do to affect change?
Yeah.
And that's a feeling, I guess, as I get older, I like understand better. I want things to change, but I'm not exactly sure how.
And then Neil Young is a jerk, which, oddly enough, though, in Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, only the second biggest jerk in that group.
Yeah.
The late David Crosby having just recently stopped taking calls. Yeah. So to wrestling. Let's get to wrestling. Why not? Because I don't want to rant on Wayne Shorter and how much I hate Birdland. although Nefertiti is a great track with him and Miles Davis. If you haven't listened to it, Music Geekery, check that out. Vince McMahon making his presence known backstage at this week's Monday Night Raw. Rumors are he was there to see John Cena. Basically, from what rumors and innuendo were, he was just kind of there to make his presence known and to get people talking. That's how I took it. But Chris, any thoughts?
I'm interested what the relationship between him and Cena is like, given the fact that like one of the last things he did before he got ripped off of TV is bring out John Cena specifically as like a human shield. Remember he introduced the 100 and
oh, that's 1, right.
Yeah. Like it's interesting that I would be interested to know how close they actually are in the wake of that.
Well, I want to go into that a little bit further because it goes into also, in my opinion, his promo this week, John Cena's.
Boy, that was a weird promo.
Because Cena has almost tried actively to position himself as the anti-Rock. That Rock went out and basically pissed all over what he did in WWE, tried to, you know, separate himself from it because, you know, he wanted to be the cool kid in the club, whereas John Cena wanted to get the approval from Daddy the entire time. And it was, you know, hey, I'm going to do this right. I'm going to continue to prop up WWE while I'm doing these entertainment endeavors. And then Cena comes out. This is one of my notes in my Lazy River thing. He comes out and absolutely pulls a Dwayne Johnson in terms of his promo. Absolutely kills Austin Theory, in my opinion. I don't understand how this promo got approved, to be honest with you, because...
Unless they're just done with Austin Theory. Like, yeah.
You'll pardon me, kids. I'm under the weather, so I'll be drinking a lot of tea. So if you're slurping, I apologize, but it's the only way I'll have a voice. But he basically said... Nobody cares about you if you win, and nobody cares about you if you lose. And that's no way to build up a match with people who are going to have to be there after you're gone. I'm sorry. It's like you.
And
have
he was
to...
really hanging the hat on the moment after Raw. So that Raw after WrestleMania, he's still going to have to come out there and face these fans. And, like, unless Austin Theory delivers the promo of his life on that Monday Night Raw, the one that makes 2023 the year we start talking about Austin Theory, in the same way that, like, you know, there was a year where we started talking about Randy Orton or whatever. If that doesn't happen on that Monday night after WrestleMania, and I don't think it will, Austin Theory is dead. Dead, dead, dead. Like, no coming back from this.
I don't even think Cena's right in that respect, because I don't think the crowd after this year's WrestleMania is going to be the same raucous crowd that you used to get, say, a couple Dallases ago. The one that I saw in New Orleans, the one that I saw in Orlando, where it's NXT is the hot, rabid brand, and so all those smarky fans are going to be coming in here and doing chants and throwing beach balls and doing things. Most of their indie darling favorites that are at the events that would play around WrestleMania are now in AEW. And the ones that were in NXT are now in AEW or on the main roster. You're not going to get that same brand of hardcore wrestling fan versus hardcore WWE fan, in my opinion. I think this crowd's going to be a lot more genteel.
I agree, but I don't think that really changes what Cena did there in the sense that he now created, like, this is when the report card is due, so to speak. Like, we will have this inflection point the Monday night after Raw. Theory will flounder, and that'll, I mean, effectively, I don't see how he comes back from that. They've tried to boot this guy up so many different times.
Yeah, they basically have said, you're worthless.
Right. Unless you could somehow redeem yourself. I mean, essentially, unless
I don't think Austin Theory has it in him to cut a five-star promo on the next day where he just kills everybody and proves that he's the guy.
Even if he had complete control of his character and it was just sort of like, go out there, reinvent who Austin Theory is, and just let the world on fire for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I don't think he could.
Yeah, he's not. I mean, Miz possibly could. MJF possibly could. I don't see Austin Theory being a guy that could.
No.
At all.
No.
No. Moving on. WWE currently in talks with gambling regulators in Indiana and Michigan to get them to legalize betting on major matches. They also attempted to do so in Colorado, but were turned down because Colorado has a law specifically banning wagering on events predetermined outcomes or where results are known before the contest, like award show. Now, this has been a time-honored tradition, and we've plugged sponsors that have allowed gambling on wrestling, but those have mostly been overseas. And, you know, overseas in Indiana, you can bet on almost anything, really. Indiana may have given us Mike Pence, but you can gamble on what time the sun comes up in Indiana. But no, but this is interesting because WWE is also now assuring that they'll use like a like an accounting service like Ernst & Young to keep the results a secret until like an hour or so before the show starts, which as a talent is interesting that you won't know who's for match planning. You know, most veterans are going to say, no, that isn't a problem or whatever. But I find that very interesting that now they're very concerned about results getting out when if people had really wanted to, they could have just used overseas bookies. And I mean, I was sitting next to a guy at WrestleMania a few years back who had like an 8-match parlay going so he could put a down payment on a house, and he's getting leaks from the back. But he won. I was so upset I didn't go in on with him because I thought for sure somebody would change at the last minute. But Nick Khan thinks that the way to growth now with WWE is much like football in terms of how gambling has gone hand in hand with both fantasy football and just in-game betting. And he wants to expand that to wrestling, Chris.
I think that betting on predetermined events is a terrible, terrible idea that like is inherently fraught in sort of any environment. Like the idea that like it's not generally allowed, I think is a good and sound law that is built on good fundamentals. And if WWE gets this, I think this will be really great for employees of the company because they will almost certainly find ways to make money off of this.
I don't know. I mean, is this one of those things where if you could have been making money off of it, wouldn't you have been already?
I mean, who's to say they aren't?
No, that's what I'm saying too. That's exactly right. What I'm saying.
Right. No, I mean, you know, it's like more opportunities to do so, I suppose. But yeah, I think that this, like on the fundamentals, like if you were coming to judge Novembrino here, I'd be like, this is a terrible idea. We're not doing this.
Here's the thing, Chris. I mean, we watch the program week to week and we almost nail it every time in terms of winners and losers.
Right.
So, I mean, it's not like it's that hard to figure out what the ending is going to be based on the television.
No, where an insider can make the money is on the surprise finish.
Yes.
And if you do one surprise finish per show, you essentially now have the bonus match, let's call it.
So start cultivating those backstage relationship, kids, and you too can get rich off of professional wrestling.
Man, I don't even have to take a bump.
What was I going to say? Personnel moves. That's the word, Hawkins. I'm doped up on cold syrup, kids. I can't help it. Alexa Bliss, the Wrestling Observer today reported that Alexa Bliss is on another WWE hiatus for a while. And Lexi Kaufman, about an hour ago, tweets out, "Well, that's news to me. They know where to find me if they need me." I like Lexi Kaufman a lot. And it's mostly based on her not needing any of this. She has great friends. She's always been somebody loyal to her friends in Columbus and stuff. She's married to a B-level celebrity. She's living the life. She has friends. She goes to Hollywood parties and everything. And she also has a chip on her shoulder about how she should be treated. And she doesn't need any of this. And that's why I like her a lot, Chris. I you know, she's never been one of my favorite wrestlers, but she's never been one of my not favorite wrestlers either. I like her a lot, but I could see her not being long for this company.
Yeah, me too. I mean, and AEW, like, she would be of use to them. She is an interesting personality. I don't think she, I mean, certainly don't think she's been fully utilized during her run. I'm with you, not the best wrestler, but not the worst. Not bad at all.
She does not offend my sensibilities.
Yeah, I would say she's like good. Maybe even like the word I might use is like steady or something. Like yeah, like she's I mean, you know, although like her big issue is sometimes the inconsistency on the high spots.
Yeah, but she's always been professionally driven as well, and she's always had a little bit of a chip on her shoulder because of the horsewomen and that she was not included when people talked about all that.
Right, right. No, they just haven't really been doing much with her.
No, and they've had no idea. Be part of this Uncle Howdy Bray Wyatt thing, and then that just went nowhere.
Dude, this has been the most half-assed attempt at Bray Wyatt to date. This particular pass at Bray Wyatt is the most uninspired it's ever been. They showed up with that whole Alice in Wonderland gimmick, like when he first re-debuted. Then Alexa Bliss was somehow going to be involved in this, and like none of that's come to pass. Now it's just like some dude named Uncle Howdy. That's what we're building to.
And Saray, who hasn't wrestled in NXT since August 2nd, losing to Mandy Rose, is leaving after her two-year contract has expired. She'll hold a press conference in Japan on March 13th, according to Tokyo Sports, and return for a show on May 16th in Shinjuku Face under her prior spelling of Saray, S-A-R-R-E-E. Or I guess they say it's Saray the same way. This has been a waste of time. I love her. She's great.
She was really good. I know,
but they did nothing with her.
They did nothing with her. They didn't. They just didn't even bother. Like, what a waste. She was.
Yeah, they decided. Yeah, we're gonna make her Japanese schoolgirl with superpowers, or whatever.
God, that final character was.
They just don't that know. Yeah. They don't. I mean, look, Asuka is one of those people who rose above stupid booking. But they also just said, Asuka, go out there and do crazy stuff. And she just went out there to be crazy.
And she looks cool. Even at long last, it's like she rose above crazy or bad booking because she has a character that's just like so like ineffably cool that you can't deny it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean.
But she doesn't speak English. We can't figure out what to do with her. You know, they're kind of having the same problem with Giovanna Bernio, the secretary, because that's all she's going to be for right now until she can speak better English, I think. Dude, give me Saray versus Mercedes. I am here for that. If they can find a way to do that match somewhere, sometime. But yeah, no, she's very, very good. That'll do it for the news segment. Now to the lazy river of professional wrestling commentary. Whatever we watched, whatever's on our mind, whatever we're thinking about. Chris, I'm going to ask this question because it was brought up by a member of Voices of Wrestling, Suit Williams. Is the acting as bad in the Bloodline storyline as in the entire Young Bucks, Hangman Page, Kenny Omega story? Because Suit's opinion was they're the same thing. And I beg to differ a little bit. I think overall he might have a point that it's bad acting in both in terms of, you know, scenery chewing. But I found a lot of the Bloodline a little bit more compelling, to be honest with you. And they've actually had some good fun moments in the Bloodline storyline, like the Feeling Oosie promo that broke everybody.
Right. Okay. So. Let me ask or answer this question with a question.
Okay.
What's the difference between Matt Jackson's character and Nick Jackson's character? We've had 3.5 years of characterization around these guys. They've been executive vice presidents with a lot of creative control. And surely during that Hangman Adam Page program, there would have been some sort of memorable defining difference between the two brothers.
One has back problems and the other doesn't.
You're right. So like let's stop right there. Jimmy and Jay have clear defined characters. Like what are the big things that this program has done, I think in a clear way, never to sort of be undone, is now everyone knows the difference between Jimmy Uso and Jay Uso. I could forgive somebody for still not knowing which one's Matt and which one's Nick.
Yes.
Character-wise, they're basically the same.
Character-wise, they're the same. You are correct on that.
Yeah. And so, like, that right there, for starters, means that there is actually better writing and better acting on the WWE storyline as compared to the AEW storyline. Never mind the fact. Yes, we don't know how this Bloodline storyline is going to end quite yet. Although we're starting to see what like the final act is going to look like and everything.
It looks like it's going to go according to plan.
Yeah, right, right, right. It'll be Cody and Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, you know, like hopefully standing tall at the end of night two. Something like that, right? I think that's much more narratively set. Let's assume that that's the finish. That's much more narratively satisfying than when the Young Bucks came out and basically gave Hangman Adam Page the heavyweight title by not interceding on behalf of Kenny Omega. Like, that wasn't... I guess your mileage can vary, but for me, that was a very unearned moment that didn't actually help Hangman Adam Page, especially when we look at it in hindsight.
Yeah. I think Suit's issue is a lot like the camera angles and things like that, too. I think, you know, you're getting the hangdog eyes from the Jacksons. Oh, go ahead, Hangman. Go ahead and lariat him.
Yeah, right. The Jacksons, as in two of them simultaneously with no character distinction between the two of them as that moment happens.
So we had AEW Revolution, ice cold takes, because all the hot takes have been taken. Overall, I thought, at least as a pay-per-view, this was one of the more watchable ones for me. Was it a great pay-per-view? I wouldn't go that far. But I was never bored. I was never, God, when is this match going to end? That I will sometimes win. And this is also possibly due to personal predilections. The Bucks are on a top match and it's gone 10 or 15 minutes longer than it should have. The women's match was a little weak. The Wardlow-Samoa Joe match was, to quote The Simpsons, cromulent. But everything else I thought was very, very good. I loved the MJF-Daniel Bryan match. I did. I, you know, God bless MJF for wearing white for 60 minutes of hard work because things go wrong. But I really, you know, for an Iron Man match, that was that it never lost my attention. And sometimes these Iron Man matches that go this long in our time of short attention spans can make us lose it. But now, let me get your thoughts, Chris. It might trigger something in me about Revolution.
So, from the top line here, I thought this was a pretty strong AEW show. I'm with you. It wasn't all home runs, but I think the I was never bored is sort of correct. I mean, other than like Jericho and Starks just didn't really have me, you know, I wasn't really locked into that. But like Cage and Perry over-delivered for me. The Elite and the House of Black, you know, perfectly fine match. It's an Elite match. It is what it is. The women's match, I'm with you. Weak. Soraya's really been a disappointment.
Yes. Like,
I'm just going to put it that way. Her return has been extraordinarily underwhelming. And then, Wardlow and Samoa Joe, I mean, we'll talk more about Wardlow. What are they doing with this guy? I feel like these programs are just not helping him. Even though he won that match just to lose it the next night. And then let's get to the main event here. I loved it. I thought it was a really great main event. Like the everything up to the finish of Regulation was stellar. It was like, for me, where the match fell apart was in that final 5 minutes. I thought that the sensibilities of this were really flawed. Specifically, our Lord and Savior Tony Khan is not going to let an injustice like this at the end of the match, a draw finish, you see. He'll not let a draw finish stand, even though it stood in other places. Tony Khan is watching this match. He cares about this match. He gets on the phone with Tony Schiavone. Shivani marches down to the ring and says, "We are going to have a clear and fair and decisive finish." And the match restarts. At which point, MJF starts cheating, and Tony Khan has apparently stopped watching the television.
Oh, that's a pretty good criticism, Chris. Keep going.
So the problem here, if we're thinking about fairness, how is Tony Khan not watching the television? I mean, if Tony Khan cares about fairness, what about MJF tapping out a second after the end of the bell? Like, how would not counting that as a submission be unfair, or counting that as a submission be unfair? But MJF can hit Bryan Danielson in the head with a oxygen tank on camera, and then Khan has nothing to say about that either during the pay-per-view or after the fact.
Well, you know who else had nothing to say about that after the fact? Bryan Danielson in that promo on Dynamite. That's the only sour note I had about his promo, is that he never addressed the fact that
he made MJF it seem had like to use MJF
oxygen tank to yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
He didn't win the match legitimately. He had to cheat to win at the end. Yes. He didn't prove his point to Bryan Danielson. If anything, Bryan Danielson proved his point at the end of regulation. And it's only because of, like, essentially poor management at the company that Danielson didn't get a fair shake in the overtime that was contrived up.
Yeah, that I want to
be really clear. It was if you are watching this match until the end of regulation, it is a wonderful hour. It's one of the best MJF matches. I thought Danielson over-delivered. I know I only like one wrestler, and there's only one good wrestler in professional wrestling right now. His name, of course, is Sami Zayn. But if I was going to include others who might one day be good, I would toss in Bryan Danielson. I see a lot of potential in him. And also MJF. Seems like that kid's got a little something.
A couple
Almost
other matches.
As good as Sammy.
Yeah, a couple other matches we didn't hit on. I thought the tag team match did over deliver. It wasn't a great match, but it didn't have to be because you had FTR coming out afterwards to do the beatdown. But Jared and Lethal are just my favorite team to watch. And I thought that was a lot of fun.
The Acclaimed seemed really stupid, though, on Dynamite, where they're like, "We're beginning our quest to get back the tag team titles." I'm like, you dipshits. Like,
yeah.
You morons.
You morons. You absolute dopes.
Like, Jesus.
What are you doing?
Right. Like, it just
You
sounds,
agreed to the four-way, you
it
stupid
sounds so
idiot.
So stupid.
When you put it like that, Chris, it becomes far more clear to me. Because here I am trying to do some highfalutin kind of analysis. You go, they're morons.
they think so stupid as characters sometimes.
Yes.
It's unforgivable.
Babyface syndrome is true, and it's rampant, and there needs to be a drug for it. Because once you turn babyface, you become a moron.
Have I mentioned that these shows are predetermined? And that's part of the reason why this is all so egregious. No one's forcing you. Tony Khan makes a last-second call at the finish of regulation finish.
Yeah.
You could have just finished the match in regulation.
Yeah, and you're just tied, and he gets the title.
You just have MJF cheat. Yeah, you have MJF cheat in regulation, and then you don't have any of these problems.
Or you just leave it as a tie, and there is no winner.
Yeah, but like,
although people would go ape for that one. 3-3. What do you mean? No, we said it was a 60-man Iron Man match. It was a tie,
and that means MJF retains.
That means MJF retains. Yes,
and he'll always talk about how he went the distance against Danielson.
Yes,
and like that is perfect heel booking.
There we go. That Chris, you and I just booked a better ending to that match.
It's so much cleaner, right? Like, yeah. And now Danielson has to get his rematch, and eventually you can have a blow off, but like, you can have like that. That's the way out of this.
Yes.
Like,
and then he goes, "See, I won the match." No, you didn't. You only tied him. You didn't beat him. Doesn't matter. Rules of the match.
Yeah. Danielson didn't win the title at the pay-per-view.
One last thing, cause this is the most controversial take. I have people that said it was a good match, but they didn't enjoy watching it. Shout out to my other broadcast partner, Paul Ace Fontaine, over on the Dynamite Show on Fight Game.
Really?
And that was the Texas Death Match.
Oh, Hangman and Moxley.
Yes.
Yeah. Mox has been a bit of a one-note song for me as of late.
You know what? Paul feels the same way. Paul thinks he just wants to be a Combat Zone wrestler in a major company.
Yeah. I actually had a fun experience this week at my local pub where I was playing pool and with these guys I didn't really know. All of a sudden, they started talking about AEW and WWE and stuff. And like,
did you say, "Hey, I do a podcast"?
No. I instead went like Jane Goodall, Gorillas in the Mist here, and I I instead was like, "All right, I must absorb all.
I must see these people in their natural habitat."
No, dude, one of these guys. It's like very close to an "it's still real to me, damn it"
sort
of
guy. Those are the best. I love those
guys.
So
I had to, like, I did eventually get into the conversation, but I had to, like, get into the convo kayfabe. So, like, I made that whole Tony Khan point I just made, like, a few moments ago, only, like, within the context of, like, thinking about the AEW universe as a fully narratively consistent universe that makes a lot of sense from week to week. I was doing some work out there. I was doing some work for the people.
Well, what was the result? You got me on my edge of my seat.
So, like, one of the things that they were talking about is, like, they got into, like, Reigns, Moxley, and Rollins. And...
oh, you had a who's the best Shield member conversation?
Essentially, like, and, like, it was more between, like, Rollins and Moxley. And, like, it's real interesting because both their careers have taken, like, kind of, like, interesting trajectories, if not necessarily optimal ones. And it just got me thinking a lot about, like, okay, Moxley's been invaluable to AEW as a character, and I think he was, like, the most valuable world champion. He really was clutch for them when they needed him. But, like, now he's really settling into this sort of very boring match style. Whereas Rollins is kind of the opposite. He's still having pretty good matches, sneakily, but his character sucks. It's awful. It's just the dog's balls. But the matches are still good. And I've been trying to figure out which of the two I think is better.
Yeah, I don't know.
Right? It's tricky. As Moxley comes out there, he's cutting the promos of his lives, and then he's going out there and having, like, the two move match. Rollins, exact opposite. And it's actually, like, weird.
Seth and Becky are having a contest who can wear the dumbest stuff out on camera.
Right. I mean, Rollins' character basically is, "I wear stupid shit now."
Yeah, he, you know what he is? He's Elton John on The Muppet Show.
Oh, no.
What kind of garish costume can I wear on this thing?
Dude, that's going to be like the Harpo Marx Tony Khan thing we were talking about before the show. Like, now I'm not going to be able to unsee that.
All right, but let's go for positive here, because I'll start on this, Lazy River. I thought Dynamite had some of the best promos I've seen in AEW. I thought MJF cut the promo of his career because it was focused. And it didn't line step to his usual trolling comedy. He loved the belt. He loved having the title. He did what he wanted to do. The video editing was genius when he says, you know, "Hey, I beat you at your own game of wrestling," or whatever, when he's hitting him with the aforementioned oxygen tank. I thought, you know, for a "you fans did this to me" promo, I thought Ruby Riott had the promo of her life out there, because she was in total narrative control the entire time, and everything she said made sense when Excalibur came back and said, "Well, I think that's some selective history." Nope. Ruby was exactly correct in everything she said in her promo. And I would go so far as to actually make her the focus now, as opposed to Saraya in this threesome of outsiders. I don't like the program all that much, but I think Ruby Riott is a much better narrative focus than Saraya is right now. I thought Wardlow had a nice short babyface promo before they absolutely... he didn't do the Wardlow's World crap. He wasn't trying to be sports entertainment Wardlow. He just went out there and cut a... FTR cut a good promo. Bryan Danielson cut a good promo, with the exception that he didn't bring up the fact that he was cheated out of the match. which drove me a little nuts. But overall speaking, I loved the promos on this Dynamite. Now, the only thing I really hated on the Dynamite was the end. Who cares about QT Marshall? Because he wasn't packaged any differently. This QTV thing is bad. I like QT Marshall. I think QT Marshall provides an invaluable service as a mid-card heel slash...
He has a place in the ecosystem.
Yes, he is a gatekeeper of heels, and that's what he should be. He is not a narrative threat to anybody in the upper tier of AEW. Even as a manager, the Factory are a bunch of dopes. They're red shirts. They're the third sports entertainment stable in a company of three sports entertainment stables. Why are you putting Hobbs in there? And your point, which I'll let you bring up as well, about the Hobbs promos in relation to this.
So, I mean, if we go back and watch some of these Hobbs video vignettes from previous weeks, they have been, let's be fair and say, somewhat murky and ambiguous, but generally trending to a babyface sort of presentation. It has been not quite the Hobbs grew up in a box sort of narrative, but we've been going back to Hobbs's streets roots, talking about how he came up from the streets. These are all things that you talk about with a babyface.
Yes.
And for him to turn heel on, this should have just been a Hoss match. It should have been, in my opinion, honestly, a non-decisive Hoss match. Like, you could have absolutely ended this show in a schmoz. But, like, this should have just been, you know, the immovable force meeting the irresistible object, or the other way around.
Yeah, meaty men slapping meat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, like, I didn't need this to be conclusive. I think this is bad, one, because you just randomly turned Hobbs yet again. Two, because Wardlow has now, like, won and lost this particular title so many times that it means nothing for him anymore. And it has done nothing for him. Yeah, it made him winning the feud against Samoa Joe pointless. If you beat someone and then drop the belt the next night, you know what you are? You're James Buster Douglas.
Yeah.
Nobody cares. They don't care that you were the world champion. They look at you as a guy who couldn't really do it. And, you know, it irks me that I feel like they're moving the wrong way with Wardlow. And if they were moving the right way with him, he is one of the few people that this company has who would make a good, credible threat to MJF right now.
Yeah.
That to me remains like the big open question. Who ultimately can really do this? Orange Cassidy had another nice match this week. I'm definitely, you know, keeping on the Orange Cassidy opener radar. He keeps delivering. I love him in this opening slot. Like, I'm loving a lot of the new stuff.
Actually jazzed for this Jeff Jarrett match.
Yeah. No, I like Orange Cassidy.
Oh, and can I bring this up also while we're on this?
No, you got to keep it to yourself. Stick it in your pocket.
No, the Jay Lethal finish was clever. I loved it. The where Lethal's arm gives out on the lethal injection. I thought that was a brilliant end to this match.
I mean, Lethal for his part also has been I know we talk always about like
that entire stable is
Jay Lethal is great. I like that. Orange Cassidy is an interesting guy for ultimately to challenge MJF. Wardlow should be in that conversation. There's a lot of narrative meet there.
Do you think that there's some WWE thinking going on here where it's like, well, we screwed Wardlow out of this title, but now that the title's off of him, we can push him? And that rarely works.
It rarely works. And I mean, the worst part about it is just Wardlow's been absent. It seems to me like Wardlow's character should sort of be like a lifelong thorn in MJF's side.
Yes.
And so
this,
like,
should be a lingering hate you for this type of thing.
And so he runs out and he'll help, like, whoever MJF's opponent of the month is, one person you might count on to make the save would be Wardlow, because Wardlow just effing hates MJF. And like, not having him, especially since you're turning Blackpool Combat Club heel apparently too, not having him out there helping Danielson makes it harder to bring Wardlow back in again. You know, it's like what you said last week about how the ending should be seeded in the beginning. I think that that's really a strong writing move in a lot of these cases. And I, one of the things that I feel like they're missing the boat with is seeding what these endings are going to be a little bit better.
Yeah. And that's all. I mean, that's the first thing you're taught in a screenplay class or a story class is that your ending is always in the beginning.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it, and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading, so you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver. No drilling required. Keyless entry. No more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second. Fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy video lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy video lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition. 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Chris, I'm going to make a nerd. I'm going to make a statement. It's going to be a strong statement. It's going to get a lot of slacks and discords upset with me. Logan Paul is better than your favorite wrestler. He is really good at this, guys. That promo on Monday, absolutely fantastic stuff from Logan Paul.
Oh, yeah. Now he finally gets that people don't like him.
Well, I think he gets that people don't like him, but he's finally allowed to say that people don't like him because that was just bad casting. But in terms of cutting, look, stadium promos to me or arena promos to me are tough because of the amount of crowd noise, because of how the microphone carries. You're not really doing a one-on-one promo at times, but you are at the same time. He held the audience. He nailed his lines. He didn't stammer or stutter. He was absolutely great in this one-on-one with Seth Rollins and The Miz. I thought he is. There are guys in the back who should be watching this in Gorilla and going, I need to work on my promos so I can be like that. That's how good he was in this.
Look, he's really he's a horrible guy.
He's a terrible human being.
He's a horrible guy. Like he is a grifter. Like with multiple well-documented cons, taking people's hard-earned money. You could say they're suckers or whatever, but like he is absolutely a scamster. That little play this video game and hatch these pets thing to make
he's
money.
He's a carny.
Yeah. But that makes him perfect for this world.
Yes.
It makes him perfect for this world. And I mean, he is someone who has authentic, true, hateable heat that presented. I mean, it's done right. It's lightning in a bottle. I don't know. I don't trust that they're going to go that well with it. Man, if Seth Rollins started calling him out like hardcore for like the phony that he is, like, I mean, I just don't know that he's willing to show that much ass. But like, if Seth Rollins actually had the gloves off, that would be fantastic.
If he had Jeff Jarrett's willingness to take personal shots, yeah, he'd be great. Because Jeff Jarrett will let you say anything about him, pretty much. It's like, whatever you say on screen, it's not me in real life. Yeah.
Right.
So to speak. Your turn, sir.
Okay. I guess let's talk about Raw. Let's talk about the Jey Uso moment here. We were talking earlier about acting. I loved you knew what was going to happen in this Jey Uso scene.
Just because it's predictable doesn't make it bad.
What a great piece of business. And the thing for me at the end of this Bloodline, when we talked about it earlier, at the end of this Bloodline storyline, there are going to be a lot of really memorable scenes that I'm going to be able to recall along the way here. Once Zayn got involved in the story and like really made this Zayn story in particular. And that to me is just like the hallmark of this. And now it makes the money after WrestleMania, the reconciliation between Sami Zayn and Jey Uso. And that could be like a blood feud that goes all the way to SummerSlam. Like, I mean, you could do so many different things with Jey at this point now. At some point, they have to reconcile. But, I mean, before then, Jey could absolutely lose his mind after the bloodline falls apart and, like, just hate Sami at, like, a whole new level. And it, like, just ignites this feud going into Extreme Rules and stuff that could be just dynamite.
Yeah, no, I'm still seeing some complaints online that Cody is getting...
Not online.
Thank you. You know, that Cody is getting to swoop in here and take Sammy's heat.
It's stupid.
And I'm here to tell people that you don't know your tropes in that case. And our friend Trevor Dame, who does like a through the years THROH podcast, was talking about, you know, comparing Spider-Man and the Green Goblin and all this, you know, all this other stuff. I'm like, well, no, that's the wrong trope here. Because in that story, Spider-Man was never robbing banks with the Green Goblin and high-fiving before turning on him. This is a Western that we're telling here right now. And Sami Zayn is the guy who's part of the bad guy crew who goes, oh, I think they've taken it a bit too far and I can't ride with them anymore. And he goes to the good guys to say, hey, I want to help you here. Those guys aren't the heroes of the story. Those are the guys who have to sacrifice themselves to get redemption, so to speak, because the good guys don't trust him, and he can't go back to the bad guys, so he has nothing else but his honor to live for. He is going to be, you know, for lack of a better term, the Christ figure. He's going to be the sacrificial lamb here. He is going. Sami Zayn is the sacrifice to then help Cody Rhodes overcome the bloodline. And that's the story we're telling here, guys. And the story isn't that Sammy turns out to be the hero, because Sammy did turn on everybody to be part of the bloodline. Sammy did turn on Kevin Owens
for
to
reasons
win the war
that
games.
Still aren't entirely clear.
Yes. Well, they were clear, but you know, now it's not so murky why he. I mean, if we really wanted to go brass tacks, and maybe we should for a second. He absolutely destroyed Kevin Owens to win that War Games. And great.
I'm saying that there wasn't a clear motivation for why Sammy did it.
Oh, for why Sammy joined the bloodline in the first place?
Right, yeah.
He had nowhere to go. That's what it was.
Right, yeah, it was essentially it. But, like, yeah, I mean, like, that's also, you know what I mean? Like, that's also, like, not really true, but, you know.
But at the same time, I mean, that's also a Western trope, is like these drifter kids who have nowhere to go. They end up joining this outlaw gang and they end up doing bad things that, you know. But yeah, it's one of those things where it's like everybody has made. I mean, it's another one of those things where it's like just because a guy turns doesn't make him a good person. And I think that the whole Kevin part of this story has been played perfectly, too, because Kevin Owens still wants nothing to do with Sami Zayn. And we're going to have to convince him somehow. And Sammy's probably going to have to die to do that, too.
Now you're kind of selling me on the money in night one would be Sammy and Kevin have the tag match against the Usos, and they lose, but Sammy proves to Kevin that he's his friend by getting just murder death by the Usos.
Oh, I don't think they can lose. I don't think can do that.
No, I was just saying you're selling me on this being very narratively satisfying.
Yeah, yeah.
Zayn ultimately has to redeem his character.
Yeah, well, I think that's gonna come on night two when Zayn and Kevin come out and prevent these shenanigans from the Usos and Solo, so that Cody can get the win.
I'd love to see them bring in Drew or something too. To help, like, really kind of make this, like, a full Avengers thing where you have, like, the baby faces all kind of banding together to strike the final blow here.
Yeah, and you know what I want? You know what I want at the end of night two? Something old school as hell, but I miss it. I want baby faces putting them on the shoulders.
Yep.
Or beating the bloodline. That's all I want, really.
Yeah, no, I want, especially if you're going to end the Bloodline story, right? Like, and we're assuming Mania is the end. Monday Night Raw, that first hour has to be the celebration of defeating the Bloodline. Like, it's just Cody, Sammy, Kevin, and whoever else, you know, out there. They have like a, you know, post Bloodline celebration or whatever. And then, you know, maybe like, that's when you debut Psycho Jey Uso. That's what I would do. I want to break him crazy now. I want to make him nuts at this point.
I mean, I still think the money would have been in Sammy and Jey somehow reconciling and bringing that, but we can't go there now.
Ultimately is, but that's going to be like the fault. Like, that's what Sammy's business is post WrestleMania. That like him and Jey still have to?
I think they're still good in him. He goes to try and save Jey from the Bloodline, because that's what it is. Jey blows this for everybody, and the wrath of the Bloodline comes onto Jey, and Sammy wants to save him. And everybody's saying, you're stupid. He just turned on you. No, I still think there's good in Jey. And that'd be kind of interesting, but I don't know.
No, I mean, you're right. There's a number of interesting ways to go. I mean, you know, Jey.
They'll pick none of them. They'll
go. Yeah, hey, I know.
Let's do Karrion Kross.
But I just wanted to say, like, I really enjoyed the Jey Uso moment. He's just really shined for me throughout this whole storyline. Like, with his character work, it's just very strong. Like, he's good at the facials, too.
I think they're going to redeem damage control at WrestleMania. The plan right now, it appears, is that Trish Stratus will turn heel sometime and go after Becky. And I think it's going to happen at the six-woman tag. I think this setup is terrible. Don't get me wrong. And I love everybody involved, maybe with the exception of Lita. Lita's never been my thing. But I'm happy they're kind of giving Bayley a little bit of an elevated platform as opposed to just forgetting about her. But, you know, do you have any opposing thoughts on this to me?
I mean, I just think that the writing around Triss has just been so everything around damage control and Becky Lynch has been so uninspired.
Yeah, it's not inspiring. And then it's just, hey, it's time to bring back the legends for their one match a year, etc., and maybe a second one in Saudi Arabia.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got nothing else for Raw, because there was a lot of bad on this Raw, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
We're bearing Gargano on the mic, even though he won.
Oh, let's talk about NXT then.
Calling Chad Gable small. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
All right. So Shawn Michaels came out and further walloped on our boy Grayson Waller. Never have they had someone who clearly has something that they're so hell-bent on making sure turns into nothing as Grayson Waller. It's quite the thing to behold.
And, you know what's funny is we all thought he'd surpass Austin Theory, and he's becoming Austin Theory.
And it's not his fault.
No.
No, it's not his fault. He's a good character. He's way more. He's just a way better prick than Austin Theory is.
Yeah,
he's
in more control. He's more in control of his prick character than Austin Theory has the aura of. He's a prick, but he doesn't really know why people don't like him. Grayson Waller knows exactly why people don't like him.
And he likes that people don't like.
Yes, exactly. He revels in it a bit.
Yeah. No, they're really missing the boat with this guy. And Shawn Michaels doing that ridiculous promo where he's talking about, like, how valuable him coming back and doing one more match would be and how everyone yearns to see him. Getting the crowd revved up for this, only to then pull the plug on that and bring in Johnny Gargano hot off of his killer appearance on Monday Night Raw. white hot, never hotter Johnny was as he stepped back into NXT. And now Waller's going up against Gargano, and it's like, whatever. Not only are we not getting the Grayson Waller versus Shawn Michaels match, which has again, if I'm booking this company, Grayson Waller beats Shawn Michaels, but like he also like beats him badly. Like it's like it makes people uncomfortable a little bit. Not like that we make him bloody or whatever, but you know, wow. Like he like I'm putting Waller over, dude. He cheats, but he like chokes out like Michaels or something. You know what I mean? Like okay. he fades Michaels. Michaels is unconscious.
Oh, I thought you meant Gargano. Never mind.
I'd have him do that. I'd have him do that with Gargano too.
Okay.
I mean, but again, it's like, what is the point of Johnny Gargano in NXT? There isn't any. So it's like, you know. What do I care? I like Johnny. I'm not like saying, you know, who cares right. about Johnny Gargano, but like, it's like who cares about Dolph Ziggler in NXT? Beat him badly. Yeah. Yeah. Like,
Chris, the lineage, that's the word I'm looking for, of phony relations in wrestling is a time-honored tradition from the Andersons and Flair to Von Erich cousins to you name it, to even Arn Anderson being an Anderson, which he wasn't. How is Braun Breaker not a Steiner, and how are the Creeds not Steiner cousins in any way? Because I love this six-man team.
Oh my God, don't those three guys have absolute chemistry?
That team are meatheads on a warpath, and I love them.
I love them. I know. You see them together.
I want like, Kevin Sullivan coming in as the Taskmaster and bringing back the Varsity Club. That's how good I love them.
I bring the like that is a babyface faction you can absolutely bring up to WWE, and those guys are great. That high spot that they did, like.
Yeah.
Watching three guys that size fly and have it look that sharp was really something. Like that made my eyes pop in a way that they don't often, because it's like so often when I'm watching wrestling, stuff is happening within a realm of expectations. I was not expecting that from those three. Like that really caught me by surprise. I was like, damn, dude. If WWE doesn't realize what they have with the Creeds and Breaker too. But especially the Creeds, like, man, they don't get it.
Rick's son's doing things, and now Scott's son has committed to play basketball at Virginia Tech. Couldn't get a real school. look at that dig in. I love this. These three. See, I wanted them to step up when they did the cut to commercial. I was expecting them to be on that pedestal and barking. All three of them just barking like the dog faced gremlin. That was a missed opportunity to me in terms of, you know, there you go. There's your brand right there. In terms of NXT, I'm going to say this and people are going to think I'm nuts. I'm all in on Thea Hale. She is fantastic. The way they explain her blowing that match with Chase U and Chase and Andre Chase going, no, you pulled through the Tyler Bate breathing stuff worked. I died at that. I'm like, that is such a good character. Look, Duke Hudson, middle manager, is terrible, but this is the character he should have. Well, you guys are a bunch of losers, you know, like he's a winner or something like that. Okay, fine. Go away. Break off. We'll have this little thing. But Andre Chase limping and still being proud of his student overcoming her fears, even though those fears blew the match for him. I went, that is a little genius piece of storytelling right there. And I loved it. I did. What other stories? Yeah, Zach is Kiana James's boyfriend, right? We've all figured that out now. Not her cousin.
Is that what? Because I feel like it's Briggs.
No, Briggs is too dumb. That was what that whole thing was. We thought he was going to go in there and hit on her and end up macking on her, possibly trying to parlay that into a threesome with the secretary of some way. But he's too dumb to know that, because he thought the flowers were from the other guy.
You're right. Okay.
From the virgin.
Yeah.
And remember, Zach the cousin snuck out the back door during the date. It wasn't here's my cousin, and you get to meet him, and he's going to leave and leave you two alone. He snuck out the back door. Old Zach is, I hope it's Dragon Lee, but it's not. Hey, I'm dating Dragon Lee. This is how we're going to introduce him. I call him Zach.
Dragons. Yeah, his first name is Dragon Zach Lee.
Yes, that's what we Dragon Zach Lee. And that's how we introduce him into this ridiculous storyline.
Fuck yeah. I'm gonna be, let's go.
Let's do it. Come on. It can't be any worse. So did we just blow off the entire breakup of Toxic Attraction on this show?
Yeah, because it didn't work and they knew it.
Behind the wrong person though, Chris. Gigi Dolan has nothing. I'm sorry.
She has nothing. I know.
She has the charisma of a rock to me in terms of this story.
Yeah, but they she's just like JC Jane.
This match wasn't good, by the way.
No, I know. That's the other part.
That
of
was disappointing.
Right?
I was hoping that they'd at least have a decent match.
But yeah, no, Gigi stinks.
Yeah, and JC's been cooled down with God, that promo that they had her cut a couple weeks ago was just dreadful.
The promo stinks. Her music stinks. Her outfits stink. Like they just.
She didn't rebrand after the breakup.
No. No, she's doing the Roman Reigns, like, the Shield thing.
Yeah, I'm still going to wear the vest for the first...
for, like, 3 years.
Yeah, for 3 years after this. Yeah, I mean, she should have said, hey, look, if she hated Toxic Attraction that much, she comes back in totally new repackaging. And yeah, there wasn't much else on this NXT show that I really liked. I mean, I like Pretty Deadly as fops, don't get me wrong.
But I'm not really interested in this Deadly versus Gallus feud.
No. And the Braun Breaker Carmelo Hayes thing was there was a note off in there, and I don't know where to put my finger on it.
Yeah. They don't.
There's a mutual respect there, but you know Carmelo's a jerk.
It's the Trick Williams thing, right? Like what does Trick Williams add to that act?
Nothing.
Nothing. He's what makes when there's like inconsistencies with Carmelo, it's almost always like, oh yeah, we have to do stuff with Trick Williams too. Like,
or he's giving in too much to whoever he's talking to. And this is a big problem under Triple H. When Triple H was a wrestler and you'd have people fighting Triple H and the good guys would always go, I respect you Triple H, but type of a thing. Carmelo Hayes should be giving Braun Breaker nothing. Carmelo Hayes should be the cockiest dude in the entire place. He should be MVP when MVP was MVP. Like the original MVP when he came out, when he was doing Terrell Owens cosplay. Carmelo Hayes should have that kind of swagger. Carmelo Hayes should have flair swagger coming out there where nobody's better than me right now type of a thing. But instead, they want to play into his popularity, so they kind of go, hey, we were the last two standing after this type of a thing. Like that shared experience where Carmelo Hayes would not be sentimental about such things. He's like, I want your name up in those rafters with the other losers type of a thing. I think that's what they're missing here. I think they really want to baby Carmelo.
They've never been fully committed to him as a heel.
Right.
That when you certain matches, he is presented as a tweener figure fairly frequently. They don't mind booking him against heels where he would be perceived as the babyface.
Yeah.
And all that would be fine for his character if he didn't have the one note Trick Williams. who's just like, do bad things. Like, that's basically his character.
He's top dollar with a little more athleticism.
Yeah, yeah. I'd much rather take a high spot from Trick Williams than top dollar.
I have nothing else. Do you?
Moist Championship Wrestling.
No, a Moist Wrestling League, you mean?
Yeah, Moist Wrestling League, yeah.
Oh,
They did over 900,000 views on YouTube last week.
How many do you attribute to you?
You know, I hadn't really thought about a hard number, right? But, like, let's sit here. Let's hold on.
They had 900,000 views?
Yeah, like,
that's more than this week's AEW Dynamite, by the way, which had 835,000 viewers.
I hate to say it, but this says something about what people actually want out of this business. It's at 979,000 views at the time of this taping.
Okay.
That was 6 days ago.
Who's watching? This has to be people who have autoplay on in their background or something. Nobody's seeking out this stuff.
No, dude. Charlie has a huge fan base.
Happened on this week's show?
They haven't put out this week's episode yet.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, his initial announcement video for this got 2 million views. And, Moist Wrestling League got nearly 1 million, which, again, is kind of like, it's kind of like wild to think about, like, oh, huh, maybe we're missing what current consumers, people who might actually watch wrestling, want out of a wrestling show these days.
Okay, well, let me take this seriously then for a second. What do you think Moist Wrestling has that people want out of a wrestling show? Big characters?
I think it is indie. It's like indie enough in its vibe that it allows for like sort of a sense of absurdism. Okay. I do think the big characters thing, and like in this particular case, lots of comedy. I also think the thing it's got going for it is that it's short. And so, like, I think, you know, like that episode was, 16 minutes and 42 seconds. I think that's a lot more in line with the level of time that people have for content in a lot of cases. Way yeah. more likely to get people to sit down and watch a 30-minute product or a one-hour product.
There you go. Let's stop doing Ring of Honor and things like that. Let's just go and make 15-minute YouTube videos.
I think
all with Mark Briscoe.
All Mark Briscoe.
All just, Mark Briscoe.
Mark Briscoe launching a Twitch channel would be awesome.
Look, I think Mark Briscoe has far more important things to do than to do dumb stuff on Twitch, to be honest with you. Although I love Mark Briscoe.
What if he won the championship on Twitch?
Okay, there we go.
There we go.
That's all. By the way, one more unrepentant stupidity thing. I love the team of Chelsea Green and Carmella. And I'd so desperately want a feud with the Iconics. But I don't think I'll ever get it.
No, it'd be fun.
Carmella, I don't know. Yeah, she's attractive, but she also just goes to 11 in terms of just going in and being completely into whatever she's doing, even if it fails miserably. And I respect that.
I also think she's always found, or not always, but often, on multiple times throughout her career, found a way to like outkick her coverage.
Yes.
With storylines.
Yes.
And yeah, that's a real test. And she's been a real success story.
Yeah. If I could get Corey to stop yelling on commentary about her, she'd be much better off. But yeah, no. I think Chelsea Green is a perfect match for her. I don't know what they're doing with her. They brought her back just to kill her, it seems. And so at least she has something to do now. But let's end it there. You can follow me at CrapGame13. I'll be doped up on cough medicine all weekend. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Various fandoms. Hey, check out all our shows. Why not? You know? You got something to listen to this weekend? No? Go listen to the Flagship. Go listen to Music of the Mat. Go listen to Open the Voice Gate. Go listen to Five Star Match Game. Go listen to Days of Thunder, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The Good, the Bad, the Hungy, our semi-new AEW-focused only show, et cetera. I do a show on Fight Game Media, patreon.com/Fight Game Media for $5 a month called The Dynamite Show. It is directly after we record, starting about 10 minutes after Dynamite ends. Hot takes, thorough deconstruction of all things AEW. That's where I pretty much bring most of my opinions to this show. Chris does various things on social media. He's going to tell them about you now.
Yeah, you can find me on the Instagram. I will be posting some dates for my upcoming shows as well with Hondo Coyote and also my duo act. You can find that at Instagram.com/DrNov, Dr. DocTor_NOV. That's Dr. Nov on Instagram. If you're interested in guitar lessons,
so much like the Mr. Plow commercial.
Mr. Plow, 1-800. Yeah.
That's my name. That name again is Mr. Plow. Mr. Plow. Yeah. Go ahead, sorry.
Yes, good shit. Yes, I also teach music lessons. If you're interested in learning how to mix music, play guitar, play bass, play drums, music theory, need a friend, all of these services are available.
People are buying friends now.
Oh, people have been buying friends, Hawkins. People have been out there buying friends. I'm just saying, I'm throwing my hat into the ring. Why not? Doesn't have to be music lessons. We can just hang out. Whatever. It's all up to you. Hit me up on the Instagram.
To quote John Mellencamp, let me give you some good advice, my young man. You better learn to play guitar. We'll see you next week.
Music, it's not just part of our daily lives, it's part of our wrestling fandom as well, and it has been for decades. That's where this show comes in. Music of the Mat, the podcast devoted exclusively to the music of pro wrestling, hosted by Andrew Rich. Hey, that's me. Each episode delivers a different topic with a variety of great guests, fun conversations, musical analysis, and of course, a heartfelt pun or two. New episodes drop every other Tuesday on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast app of choice. Check out Music of the Mat only on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.